The following podcast contains sensitive material that may not be appropriate for young audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to the Classical Academy's podcast, Partnering with Parents. Join us as we educate, encourage, and support parents in their role as the primary educator.
I'm Cameron Curry, Executive Director for the Classical Academies, and welcome again to Partnering with Parents, our podcast for the Classical Academies. Today promises to be an important and emotional conversation for our community, and I'm so fortunate to be spending time with Jennifer and Mike Hardy, as well as our lead counselor for the Classical Academies, Laura Hughes. So welcome, everybody.
Welcome, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you for having us. We appreciate you having us here today.
Absolutely. So let's take just a moment. Laura, introduce yourself, your background, and tell us why you're here today.
I'm Laura Hughes. I'm the lead counselor for the Classical Academies, the lead social-emotional counselor for the Classical Academies. I have a background in mental health and within the school system, and it is my passion to provide social-emotional support for students who might be struggling, just with day-to-day life and the small stuff to the large stuff.
So, Laura, you actually oversee a team of social-emotional counselors here at the Classical Academies. How many people are on your team now?
I do. We are fortunate to have, there's seven of us, so I oversee a team of six. So we have a social-emotional counselor on every campus supporting all students. So it's really great, and I'm blessed. Classical Academies is a great place because they see that there is that component that's needed, and we're blessed to have the support of our leaders. So yeah, it's great.
So Mike and Jen, this will be an emotional time for us, I'm sure. Today is a very special day, I know, in your lives, and we're here to talk about the death of your son, Sebastian. And so today is his birthday. Tell us about him.
He was an amazing child. He was always very kind, compassionate, overly sweet. Mm.
Very sensitive child. Really just, you know, one thing that sticks out in my mind is when I think about Sebastian is I'd say, you know, what do you like about that friend? He'd say, Mom, he's nice. I like nice people. Mm. And, you know, he liked good people and he was a good person.
Yeah, he always surrounded himself with really nice people. Even if from a, you know, a cool standpoint, they weren't cool. He always chose nice people.
Good people.
No matter what. And so it was... It was a really neat quality that he had naturally.
Well, I know we had an opportunity to spend some time before today's broadcast, and I think what I walked away from was just how normal you guys are. Just a normal, loving mom and dad, doing great things, just, you know, loving your kids and being a part of the Classical Academies. How long has it been since Sebastian's death?
It's been 6 months.
6 months.
Yeah. Tomorrow it'll be 6 months.
Yeah. So it's pretty raw still, but we're you know, with faith, and we're getting through it in family. Mm-hmm. We you know, it's definitely something that will either tear a family apart, or it will bring you together like nothing you've ever seen before, and we've chosen that way.
To come together as a team.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And why did you want to have this conversation today?
You know, if we could help one child, even one family, from losing their child, it would just make all the difference to us.
And I think it's really important to bring awareness. This is like a very difficult topic for so many people, and there's a lot of fear that surrounds it. And I think it's really important that parents know how much it really does happen, and that it's a second leading cause of death. And I had no idea of that, of teenager death, I should say, second leading cause. And I think that it's, you know, just to really bring it to the forefront for them to realize, like, this happens to, like, normal everyday families. Like, this isn't something that's, you know, maybe what society envisions. And I think,
know for us, we thought it would be different. You know, we never thought we'd be in this situation.
Especially because of the type of person that Sebastian was. He was so sweet and kind that even if there was a time of depression here and there, we never thought he could actually leave us. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, I think that's really important for, you know, I just want parents to be really aware of of how much it's actually happening.
Okay.
And maybe we can help with a few things, a few little things that maybe we could have tweaked and we would have maybe seen like this was coming.
Mm-hmm. Right. Hindsight being 2020.
Oh, right.
Yeah. For sure. Yep.
So Laura, in your experience being in the counseling department, is suicide touching our community here at the Classical Academies?
Sadly, it does. It affected us greatly last year with the passing of one of our high school students, Sebastian Hardy. It affects us quite often. In fact, we've done 90 risk assessments just this year alone. And we have, you know, Jen and Mike here, very brave, very strong parents of Sebastian, who I want them to tell their story of how it's affected them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. Sebastian, at a very young age, was diagnosed with some mental health issues of OCD in particular.
And anxiety.
And that's something that he struggled with. And it's something that he was under care of a psychologist and a psychiatrist. And we were very aware of this. He's also a really sensitive, sweet child, but also really a normal kid. You know, he liked to snowboard. He liked to paintball and skateboard. And
he was very active, but he had issues with organized sports. His OCD would get in the way of him being a part of a team. He felt a lot of pressure from other teammates when he would try organized sports. He wasn't able to make, like if he was good at a sport, he'd always downplay it because he always felt like it made the other team or the other players feel bad about themselves. So it really affected his athleticism in a sense. So the sports he chose were, independent sports. And it did affect him at a really young age.
And I think that his mental health issue looked as it looked like a more sweet, kind child. People were more attracted to him, and he was just out in the world. And he was the type of child that, you know, all the teachers really loved him. And he was a junior this year. He would be graduating as a junior. And but approaching his death and him taking his life, the typical signs weren't there that, you know, that you read about. They were the opposite kind of signs. I think there was some goodbyes that he was saying to people, and his OCD almost seemed better and improved, which gave us a false sense of security that everything was going well. So I think that, you know, it doesn't always look the way that people think that it looks when somebody takes their life. It's not necessarily even a kid that's out there saying, I'm going to take my life, because in our case, that wasn't the case.
Sebastian had just gotten his braces off. He had just grown 6 inches. He had gotten his driver's license. He was starting to get more independence.
He was working out.
He had gained, 20 pounds of muscle. He was just really excited about life. And he had a infectious smile. You know, he was funny, super funny. And so in the last days, it just felt like he was really coming into his own.
And moving in a good direction.
Oh, great direction. Yeah, he was happy at school. He was, I think towards the very end, his grades were failing a little bit.
I think it was more, there was a class that he didn't go to, and that was not like him. He was always trying to please, and that was odd and out of characteristic. But in my mind, I thought, wow, this is great. He's a normal teenager. Like, he's not stressing out about this.
Right.
But then I stepped in as a parent, and I, was after him for that. But, I think suicide, too, if people think of it like a glass of water, and there's a few drops here, and there's a few drops here, and there's a few drops here of stress, and then before you know, the glass is full, and it's pouring over, and then the spillover is where the suicide happens. It's not that, I got after him that morning or that he was having a problem with this or that. I think it was the overall effect and the glass was full. So,
you can't blame those last two drops.
Yeah, and I think...
No, right.
And I think, though, that's just... I just really want all parents to just really engage and really listen and ask questions And that's something that we've been working on as a baseline to try to evaluate stress for every parent, not just kids with mental health issues, or but to evaluate their stress. And that's something we've been working on with the SEB level. It's an acronym for my son's name. So it's Stress Evaluation Baseline. And that's something that we're putting together right now with a psychologist, and we're working on that.
So with the hindsight of 6 months behind us now, are you looking at that final week of his life, and have you seen there were warning signs that were happening that maybe you weren't even aware of? But with the hindsight now, you can see stuff?
Looking back, it's you know, it's just starting to become clear, especially going to survivors of suicide meetings. A lot of times there's this sense of relief when somebody has made that decision, which is unfortunate. Mm-hmm. Because I think they realize that there's an end to their stress, which is a false sense. Yet, it for them it's very real, because they feel like the pain's going to go away. So Sebastian was he had gone and visited some teachers, his fifth grade teacher, who's amazing, kindergarten teacher, who were just amazing teachers. And he went to their classes, and I got two different texts from them on different days, just raving about what a, you know, amazing young man he's become, and, wow. And what a just a kind soul, and just very proud of him. But now looking back on it, it makes us wonder, as parents, was he saying goodbye? Which was hard, because I was just so proud of him at that moment. You know, what teenage kid, you know, goes and sees their old teacher? I mean, I know some do, but
sure.
It was really neat to see him reaching out to a lot of old friends. He had gone to one of his old high schools, and he was going to football games and rekindling all these old relationships. So we just thought, wow, this is amazing. He's really come out of his shell. And
I think it's hard because the signs for him were subtle. But what I'm learning at the survivors of suicide meetings is that he's not alone. There's other parents that are talking the same way, that the same experience that we had. Sometimes it's, more in your face, the signs are, and other times it just seems like they're so subtle. And so how does a parent know if their kid is a normal teenager, or right. if they're suicidal and mm-hmm. having suicidal thoughts if they're not saying it? So that's, you know, that's kind of what we've been really, you know, racking our brains trying to figure out, like, how to help other people so this doesn't happen to them.
Yeah, and I think if parents were to use some type of a number system to where they could hopefully daily, hey, where are you at?
Your stress level out?
Yeah, what's your stress level? And every kid's going to be different.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to figure out your individual child. Even if you have multiple children, each child in your family is going to be different. So you can't just blanket a number. But I know with Sebastian, we had a level, and it really worked well. But unfortunately, that day, we didn't use it. And we, you know, woulda, coulda, shoulda, but we wish we would have right. known where he was at.
And that's an easy thing to be asking as well, instead of trying to understand where they are emotionally, but ask them specifically, where are you on the scale today?
Exactly.
And that's a huge indicator for you to say, oh, they're traditionally at a 5.
Okay. Right.
They say a 4, they say a 6. Okay, it's okay.
Exactly.
Because many kids can't articulate how they're feeling.
Exactly. Or they don't want to talk about it.
Right. I love the number system. They can't articulate, or they don't want to communicate with you. But a simple number, hey, mom, I'm at a 5. Hey, dad, I'm at a 1 today.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Our number scale that we used with him was with the OCD. But see, this is where I'm finding that if we would have had an overall stress number, that would have been better, because in the last few days, we didn't even see his OCD. So we thought he was doing better.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously,
real false sense.
Yeah. False so that's where I've kind of changed my thought process on that, and thinking that an overall stress number, and then kind of use that to gauge you as a parent, like, maybe this isn't the day to put more pressure on them. I'm about ready to put some pressure on my kid. Let me just check in and see where they're at and make a decision based on their stress level versus, you know, because they're not going to maybe tell you everything.
Mm. So Laura, as the mental health professional here today with us, can thoughts of suicide actually be prevented?
So thoughts of suicide, where those maybe can't be prevented, the act of suicide can absolutely be prevented. in fact, thinking about suicide in your lifetime is completely normal. What's abnormal is acting upon it, setting up a plan. So the most common pathway to suicide is through depression, and that is afflicting two-thirds of the people who kill themselves. We look back and they have a depression diagnosis or they've gone through some depression stints in their life. However, not all depressed people attempt suicide.
Make that connection.
Right. I want to stress that, and I think the Hardys would agree, life is always the best option. Because there's help for depression, there's help for OCD, there's help for your stress levels, there's, you know, there's support out there. So thoughts, yes, can be normal. It is always that the desire that we talk about that's abnormal. The action is always, always preventable.
Yeah, absolutely. Agreed. I totally agree with that. Agreed. Absolutely.
Jennifer was actually saying that if somebody is feeling suicidal, if they just stop and don't move, just stay where you're at. If you feel like you can't talk to somebody, like you're too...
Just freeze.
Don't do anything. Right. Tomorrow will be a better day. Tomorrow will be a different day.
The first option is always to reach out for help. But if for some reason the person's not able to do that, if you lay in your bed, freeze, do not move. Just don't move. Because you will reset. You will. It's not going to stay with you. It's a passing thought. It's a passing feeling. And then to reach out to help when you're stronger. But the first option is always to talk to somebody, obviously. But if for some reason, you know, just don't move. Freeze.
And if it's not mom and dad, it's a friend. It's a family friend. It's a grandma. It's a grandpa. It's your teacher. Mm-hmm. It's your school counselor. Mm-hmm. It's your coach.
True.
Yeah. I always feel like trusted adult is always the best first trusted, you know, counselor, trusted adult.
Sebastian had actually told a few friends that he had stopped his medication. And
that's what I wanted to touch on as well, is how important it is, even friends, when they hear some of these things, it should trigger, I need to do something. I need to say something.
Exactly, mm-hmm. Exactly. Now in hindsight, we're all, you know, feeling like we should have, you know, we should have acted on something that we're thinking about now. Everybody feels... They could have helped, but that was hard for those kids that knew that because they didn't think much about it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That doesn't mean anything to them. They don't know what that means, you know. So hopefully,
if we would have known, you know, it would have been, you know, maybe we could have helped them.
I'd like to add what the classical academies are doing. We're training our staff. We're training, our students, if you will, through. Monthly campaigns. They know when they see something to say something. Our teachers know that there's a protocol, how to handle the warning signs or behavior changes, or a student who may write some dark thoughts in an essay, mm-hmm. Or a piece of artwork seems a little off. If your intuition is screaming at you, they know the proper channels. Mm-hmm. So talking to their school counselor on their campus. Reaching out to parents and letting them know, hey, I'm noticing a little something, a change in your student. So there's, we're really creating this culture of if I see something or if I feel something, I'm going to say something.
There's some validity there. Mm-hmm.
That's great.
Yeah, very good.
What did you want parents to know today? Were there two or three things you think are really important that they need to know?
Well, I would just like to say that it would have been nice to know, or maybe it was on us as parents to educate ourselves, but we just didn't think that we, you know, this would have happened to us. And I think every parent we've met felt that same way. There's obviously a few exceptions. Some people, you know their children are battling suicide. Mm-hmm. We never really had that opportunity to intervene, but you know, suicide, you know, is, if it goes at this rate, is going to be the leading cause of death. And as, you know, parents of a teen, we assumed it was, you know, drunk driving or drugs. But, you know, suicide right now is number two, but it could, you know, it can easily go to number one.
So Laura, it seems that teen suicide is actually on the rise. Why is this, and what's happening that's causing this?
You know, I don't know if there's, you know, some set research or data that shows why this is happening, specifics, exactly. But I can tell you that the society has changed. Mm. We've got more kids disconnected to human interaction and more connected to their media.
Their phones,
their tablets. You know, the pressures we're putting on our kids is increasing. You know, we want the best for our kids, of course, but what's the best for your child is a different than what's best for someone else's child. So, you know, going back to the pressure, you know, that stress level, if your child can handle a full schedule and three extracurriculars and
musical theater and
AP courses and straight A's, great. You know, but if your kid is just, you know, is thriving elsewhere, you know, they're happy in school and, you know, they're maintaining a pretty balanced day, then that's okay for your child. So I think just knowing your child and taking a step back sometimes when you're noticing that your child's getting a little more anxious or a little, you know, withdrawn. I think that, you know, that's just really important, knowing your child and not setting expectations. Let your child be who they are.
Well, I just know as a parent, sometimes it's difficult because my experience growing up and who I am as an individual, it's hard not to put that off on the kids, and the kids see that and kind of going, well, dad's doing this and dad's doing that. And sometimes we as adults are maybe even putting off false messages to our children about overachieving and about not being stressed out and just pushing through opportunities and not really having that sense of, guess what, we are different. And it's okay that you're not going to do everything. And I get that on Facebook and all social media, you're seeing all your friends do everything. But we also need to pull back as adults and kind of go, what you're seeing on Facebook and social media is not necessarily how they truly are living their lives. And, you know, there's a balance there.
Yeah, and I think you're going to end up where you're going to end up. Different paths lead us in different directions. And, you know, just taking a step back, you are Cameron Curry after years and years of experience. And
always been the snotty. It's all right.
we all have different
sure.
paths. And as long as you're happy, I think that's success to me is happiness. It's not your title. It's not where you went to college. It's not all the extracurriculars I do, but I'm happy in my life. And, mm-hmm. and I think that's what we all want for our children is happiness.
Absolutely.
I think there's something else, you know, I've been seeing too. It's like, for example, Sebastian was putting so much pressure on himself, and I'm seeing a lot of that as well. So sometimes I feel like it's the parents putting their ideas and things on their kids, but a lot of times it's these kids. They're, you know, we see them, we're like, oh my gosh, they're so driven. This is awesome. They're so goal oriented, but sometimes to their own demise. So
that's a great point.
As strange as that is, mm-hmm. I think sometimes like we have to help them kind of let them know like, hey, listen, you know, you're only 17, you're only however old you are, and you have a whole lifetime ahead of you. Like it doesn't have to be done all today. And we were seeing that with Sebastian, and we encouraged that because we saw it as just a really amazing thing that he had all these goals written down and he was just driving to get to them. And you know, hindsight, that's one thing that I can see that we could have done is helped him take that pressure back off, you know, and say, don't worry about that today. You know, it can wait.
And really, does an employer really care how you did on a science test when you were a junior in high school? They don't. And they'll never ask that question.
Yeah, good point.
They never will. And I know from dealing with families whose children have had problems with drugs or alcohol, there's a sense of shame that comes with that. There's a sense of shame as how did this happen to me? And is this really our family going through this? How are you guys dealing with stepping away from what's true or stepping into what's true and stepping away what's not true?
Well, you know, it's interesting because it's been really hard, the shame part of it. But we are so fortunate that in our community, we live in Poway. And a lot of people... I grew up there and a lot of people know us and we have a large network of friends. And so I think what it did in our particular situation is people around us were like, what? This is insane. How did this happen to the Hardys? And it really shook them up as well. But what I see at some of the suicide support groups that we go to, suicide survivor support groups, is that if you didn't have that network around you, then there is even more shame because there's nobody there around you saying, mm-hmm. hey, how did this happen to you? They're like, whoa, that happened to you? And so, although it's still something that we contend with and it's really difficult because there's always going to be a sense of guilt or responsibility, it's something that we're extremely fortunate that we had all these people watching our family and watching how we parented and watching how we interacted and saw how loving we were and how we were every normal family. So I think in that regard, the shame is still there, but it's, I feel so fortunate and thankful and blessed that it's not as much as it is for some families. But I feel like that's another reason why we need to speak out and talk about it. It's, you know, it's also for the survivor families too, to take that shame away because, you know, there really is no reason for it, but it's there.
It's there.
It's unfortunately.
There. I think the biggest things that to look for, it seems that it's sometimes the absence of things as well. And that is broad. Mm-hmm. And it's, so you're like, and it's hard to sort through, right? Is your kid a normal teenager or are they not a normal teenager? And I think that the things to look for, you know, if you're looking for your kids being on drugs, if you're looking for your kid completely withdrawing and saying they're going to kill themselves, then you could potentially miss it like we did. So sometimes they're extremely subtle things. And it is sometimes like getting exceptionally better, which is what you want for your child, right?
Right.
So that's why that question is so hard for me to answer because...
Well, the morning of, typically, so we had a little bit of a...
He didn't go to class.
He didn't go to class that morning, and we were upset.
A red flag.
Yeah, we were upset, and so we had that talk with him. You know, what are you doing? Were you, you know, how you can't maintain this? You know, where? What direction are you wanting to go in?
Right.
And it got a little heated, and the way he handled it was very different than he typically would have, because he was always the type of child that if you said I'm going to put you on timeout as a little child. He would, no. And I'll never forget my best friend saying, what's timeout? And I said, I don't know. I've never had to do it. He was that kid that just, he knew don't it was bad. It. And yeah. I can't go there. My daughter, on the other hand, you know, she's like, well, what is it? Let's find out, you know. But
Can I tell you what I'm hearing? It's important for someone who's out there who's contemplating suicide that's the absolute wrong choice. And so I'm hearing, yes, there are warning signs, but also like it was his decision. Mm-hmm. And so like you're taking like, does that make sense?
No,
putting like, this was his mistake. This was his choice.
Yeah.
Nothing you did. You did everything right. You've done everything right.
Yeah.
You continue to do everything right. He
left us a note. And in the note, it told us that we didn't do anything wrong and that he loved us. And he told us this, but it still doesn't mean that we wouldn't have done everything to get in his way to stop that.
Every day we talk about if we could just have that OCD back, if we could just have that child, we would have dealt with that forever. You know, it's so interesting now looking back and if I could talk to him, I'd say, do you want to live at home forever? It's okay.
It's okay.
we'll put a place in the garage. You'll be fine. Yeah. No stress.
I found myself listening to a song recently, and it's by a country artist, and it's called Five More Minutes. And he's dedicating it to his grandparents and about how he just wished he had five more minutes with his grandfather. And it's the same thing here. It's like just those five extra minutes with the information you have now would have changed the course of, you know, everything, mm-hmm. everything.
I think Sebastian thought in some strange way that he was helping us. I think he felt like he was a burden on our family. And if I could talk to him, I would tell him that he's not, you know.
This is much more
of a burden, mm-hmm. you know.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So along with those warning signs, Laura, are there things that we should be watchful for at home?
Well, knowing the warning signs is important. I can go over a few of them. So just looking out for behavior changes, like is it new? Has it increased? If it's related to a painful event, a loss, or a change in life. So looking out for students who are at risk, you know, in high school, it's the first breakup. You know, that could, you know, that's something, you know, let's get some support. Let's start talking to our kids about that. if a person is talking about killing themselves, has no reason to live, being a burden to others, feeling trapped, experiencing unbearable pain. These are all warning signs. Other things are increase of drugs and alcohol use, looking for ways to end their life, looking online for materials or the means, acting recklessly. All teenagers have that point in their life where they're acting recklessly, but is it, you know, above and beyond? Is it not your child? Withdrawing from activities, isolating, sleeping too much or too little, calling people, saying goodbye, giving away their prized possessions, increasing aggressive behavior. Again, that's such a broad spectrum. It's just change in behavior, and we just know your child and talk to your child, have open communication. And if you're not the one that your child feels comfortable talking to, reach out to a trusted adult. You know, I love, it's the National Prevention Organization that has a Be the One To campaign message. And it's 5 easy steps. Okay. Ask the question, how are you doing? If you get a sense that suicide might be in their thoughts.
Well, this is where that scale comes back in.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Start the scale as soon as possible scale. With your families on a 1 to 5 or a 1 to 10, and then ask the question, where are you on the scale?
Right. And it's okay to ask your child or a friend of yours, are you thinking about suicide? You're not giving them the idea. You're just making sure, you know, they're okay. If their answer is yes, keep them safe. What does that mean? You know, make sure they're safe. If they are, yes, I'm thinking of suicide, I have this plan of action, it's okay to call 911. That is an emergency situation. Keep them safe, meaning protect them, be supportive. Just be there for them. Help them connect with a medical health professional. Maybe that's calling your school counselor. Maybe that's calling your pediatrician. And then follow up with them. Hey, how are you doing? How are you doing now? You know, now that we've got all these supports in place, let's make sure to keep, you know, those thoughts at bay. So there is hope. There's a chance for recovery. And, you know, suicide is never the right choice. It's a terrible choice to make. And it puts such a burden on those left behind.
The pain that Sebastian was feeling in the end of his life, he's left it tenfold to everybody else. Mm. So, and if you care about the people that you love, you would never do this to them.
You would never do this to them.
I know for a fact, if he knew what we were going through right now, he wouldn't have done it.
Mm. Mm-hmm, for sure.
So Laura, I just really want to revisit those quickly. So we want to ask the question. We want to keep them safe. We want to be there. We want to help them connect. Walk me through. Help them connect with what?
Help them connect to a mental health resource. Oh, okay. And if you're not the person that, you know, a lot of us don't have that arsenal of who to call, reach out to your schools. Reach out to your, again, pediatricians. We're the professionals that can help guide you to the right people to talk to and get the right help.
And I think one more thing I can add to that too is one thing that I hear a lot in the suicide support groups that we go to is that extreme highs and lows. I think that's a huge one. That's one that we hear again and again. Okay. If you see your child experiencing extreme highs and then extreme lows, that's, I think, a huge warning sign and something to be aware of.
Can you give me an example of that? So really, really good days. This is the best day of my life.
I feel like, you know, just extremely excited. And then an hour later, just really down in the dumps and just wanting to go to sleep and being lethargic and kind of melancholy.
So Sebastian did actually, he had gone to a football game and he said that he was just on a high, seeing a bunch of friends he hadn't seen in a long time. He was just elated. And then he got home and he said, he brought it up to Jennifer. I don't know why. I was on such a high and now I'm just
very low.
So low.
Mm. And one thing that I didn't know, was that he, had stopped his medication at that point. So that would make sense. So if you drop off your medication, that can cause extreme highs and extreme lows. So, and that's something.
But remind me too, you were actually in a situation where you were encouraged to stop monitoring and helicoptering every single detail.
Right.
And so where you normally would have checked, has the medication been checked today? Or, you know, so you were kind of in that situation.
I was encouraged because to stop monitoring because he was 17 and he was very close. Today would have been his 18th birthday to be able to make his own legal decisions. And so I was encouraged to not monitor or watch. And it was a point of conflict for many years. So originally when he went on medication, I wouldn't put him on until he asked for it. And that was always opened. And so he asked for it. And so it was always something that he wanted. So I didn't assume or dream of the fact that he would ever stop.
Just stop. Right.
I just thought, you know, he's a teenager. He's sometimes forgetful. And so sometimes I'd see his OCD act up a little and I'd say, hey, did you take your medicine? He'd go, oh yeah, I need to take it. So in recent time, I'd been encouraged to stop doing that.
And I want to add the only, seek a medical professional, your doctor. If you're contemplating stopping your medication, never do it on your
cold
own.
Turkey.
Right? Never do. Sure. Consult your doctors.
Yes.
He had done, and the problem with teens these days is they think that everything they read on the internet is real and true and correct and it's been verified. He had done some research. So after he had passed, I was looking through his web history, and he had done research on how long would the side effects subside when he stopped his medication. The problem is the website he was on was basically a forum where these people were non-professionals answering other non-professionals' questions. And he took that as valid, and that was a huge mistake. If he would have gone to us or a professional, he would have known that that's not the case, and you can't just drop off of a medicine like that and assume that the side effects are going to be gone within a few days. So I think he was really thinking that when he dropped off the medicine, this is how I am without it. The problem is that's not how he was. That was the effect of the medicine. These extreme highs and lows were the effect of that. And I think he just assumed that this is how life was without medicine.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So knowing that you guys are this deeply loving family and Sebastian had a sister, no doubt the impact has been substantial, not only on you, but also his sister. Has this changed your parenting style at all? Or has it, no doubt it's grown you much closer together as a family. Can you talk to us about that?
We're very, very tight. We've always been a very tight family. It's definitely pulled us all closer together. I would say spiritually, emotionally, we realize that we're all going through this at different times.
Right.
We're going through different emotions at different times, and we all have to work around that. And so it's tricky, and it's there's a lot of obstacles, but I would say for the most part, we definitely know each other as a family more than we ever did before. And I didn't think that was possible, but, you know.
So. Mm-hmm. Definitely, I agree with that. And Madison has just been like the most amazing, beautiful person through this really extremely difficult, you know, time and tragedy. And, you know, she talks of wanting to help other people with this too. And, you know, I asked her, I said, you know, we're going to do this podcast today. How do you feel about it? You're going to be at the school next year. You know, this doesn't have to be your story too. And she said, no, Mom, I want this. She says, I want to help other people. And she's like, absolutely, no, do it. So we, you know, we checked with her and made sure that she's okay with it. And so she's really an amazing...
Because it's our story.
Yeah, it is.
It really is.
You guys are feeling it's our story now. Right.
Yeah.
Closing thoughts. What do you want us to know? What do parents need to take away from our conversation today? Is there something you'd like to add? And maybe you've already said it before, and that's all right.
Yeah. I want to thank you guys here at Classical Academy first and foremost, because you're so brave. And this is a really hard topic, and not enough people are talking about it. And there's stories out there that say that if you talk about it, it causes it. But we know this isn't true. It's the statistic is going up and up and up. And nothing goes away when you don't talk about it. So I feel you're just such a brave school. And I'm just so thankful. And I just want to express our gratitude for you being even willing to do this. And I just want parents, to have hope in their kids' future. But just be really aware, I think, of their stress level and when you're parenting and how you're parenting and how much pressure they're even putting on themselves. Maybe it's not you that's putting the pressure. I didn't realize that my son was putting so much pressure on himself. So I think,
the pressure could even be from, you know, social media or friends or,
you know. Right. Things that you're not even aware of.
Exactly.
You think things are going well because it all looks good.
Yep.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Thank you for having us here
today.
Thank you so much. Laura, some final thoughts?
Well, if you or someone you know is struggling with thoughts of suicide, reach out. Talk to a trusted adult. Speak to your school counselor. We are here at the Classical Academies to support you. But also there's a national 24-hour, 7 days a week, free confidential lifeline. There's trained crisis professionals. So that number is 1-800-273-8255. And another great resource that I'm finding that the teens are especially liking is the text crisis line. Teens text, so this is what they know. So simply texting connect or really any word to 741-741 and a live crisis counselor lets you know that they're listening on the other end.
Okay.
That's great.
741-741. Yeah. That's great. So Jennifer and Mike, we are so deeply sorry for the loss of Sebastian. He was such a beautiful soul, and we are going to be forever grateful for your willingness to share your story to help our community understand suicide. I had told you last time that we were together, somebody had given me your Christmas card this last year that have both your children on it. And I can, I know from my son what a beautiful boy he was. And I appreciate the fact that you have taken the time to share information about Sebastian, this terrible situation, but you're actually using his life to elevate the conversation on suicide and giving giving others hope as a result. So thank you.
Thank you so much.
Anything we can do to help.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
If you or someone you know is struggling with suicidal thoughts, call the National 24-Hour Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255. You can also text CONNECT to 741-741. This podcast is brought to you by the Classical Academies, a group of award-winning public charter schools serving over 4,500 students in Southern California. If you have a suggestion for a future episode, email us at podcast@classicalacademy.com. Subscribe to our channel or leave us a review. Thanks for listening.